League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in, everybody. It is great to have the band back together. As usual, I've got Carla Dawson, the Monday Night Delight, sitting next to me. And Jose has returned. He was gone last week. Where were you, Jose?
I was in Denver, Colorado, on vacation for about a week.
The fact you even came back to Houston, I'm impressed, Jose. I would have stayed.
Yeah, as we sit here in the dog days of summer, Woo. Lots of heat, lots of humidity. Denver certainly wins. But there were rumors you went out, you were gallivanting around on the town. There are pictures of you on social media with young women.
No.
Yes, there's a lot going on out there. We want full disclosure after the show.
I paid TMZ for those pictures to be removed. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know that Carla especially keeps close tabs on all of your social life.
She does. She was calling me every day. It's
I'm
kind
sure
of annoying.
She was. Bed check. You know, at midnight, are you alone? Where are you? What are you doing?
Who's that girl? Who's the brunette? Who's the blonde? Who's the this? They got to get by Mama Carla first, Jose. I'm just telling you that. It's not going to be easy.
Well, good news for you, Jose. While you were gone, you may know Carla's contract was up. And rather than let her walk, and I didn't give her an extension, I put the franchise tag on her. So she's locked up for at least
one
year.
I'm one wealthy lady.
How do you feel about the franchise tag?
I feel good about it. Because I realize I'm not worth the top five in the league, so I'll take it.
She's Woo! Happy with the money. Well, we're going to unpack coming up whether Jadeveon Clowney is happy now.
I'm going to be the Kirk Cousins of radio. You watch me.
Well, he
you
sure
can
did
keep
well.
Tagging me.
That's right.
Bam, 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 times three, and worked out nice for
the
him.
The tag is on
Guy
Carla.
Never won a playoff game, and look at him laughing all the way to the bank. So I'm your female Kirk Cousins.
Fantastic.
In the making. There we go.
And while you were gone, Russell Westbrook is coming to Houston. Apparently, he reached out to you, Carla, on where to live. He's looking for neighborhood advice. You're going to help him out?
We're not going to get into that right now. You're just going to have to wait.
All right. Joel Blank is going to join us next. He is an NBA insider, and we're going to ask him what the impact of Russell Westbrook is to the Rockets and what the new balance of power looks like in the West.
He is a wealth of knowledge. I cannot wait to talk to him.
Joel Blank, when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, when the news came down that Russell Westbrook was coming to the Rockets, the guy we all needed to talk to was Joel Blank. Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Joel Blank, our NBA insider. Joel, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Guys, always a pleasure to join you. Looking forward to it. Let's talk a little hoops.
Let's talk a little hoops.
I'm sure you haven't talked a bit about the Westbrook trade.
No, not at all. It's like the least popular event on the planet these days.
All right. Well, so tell us, how do these two players fit together, Harden and Westbrook? And then what does it mean for the Rockets and the landscape of the West?
Well, I'll say this. First and foremost, David, the biggest thing was the Rockets had to do something. The window of opportunity that was wide open 4.5 years ago was pretty much sewn shut after game six this last year. So they went from irrelevant in terms of the landscape of the top teams in the NBA to at least being a sexy team that's going to be marketable, that literally has a roster that has the chance to compete for a championship. But until we see how they play on the floor, no one's going to know for sure if this trade was a success or not. Oklahoma City was a success simply because of the fact that they eliminated one extra year at $47.5 million from a team that's rebuilding. They loaded more draft picks onto a roster that's going to have 15 first-round picks between now and 2026. So
incredible.
They're well on their way to stockpiling what they need to have. But, you know, it could be oil and water with Westbrook and Harden when it comes down to they could be the best of friends, but they're both used to playing the exact same style, the exact same way with the ball in their hand. And until we see that actions speak louder than words, and one of them, if not both of them, agree to defer and do less mm-hmm. so the team can achieve more, we really don't know what this Rockets team is going to be.
Yeah, because you look at this. So Westbrook has got the number one usage rate in the NBA at 41.7%, and Harden's number two with 40.5%. And it's like somebody, whether they want to admit it or not, somebody's going to have to take a bit, accept a lesser role. And can you ask Russell Westbrook, who has been the man in OKC for 11 years, I don't see where he says, yeah, I'll do that. Because when Harden and Westbrook played together, that was a different situation. James was the sixth man coming off the bench. And now it's his team and Russell Westbrook's joining it.
Yeah. You know, Carla, you know, here's the bigger thing, too, is the fact that the reason why Kevin Durant was miserable and wanted out of OKC is because he was Batman, Westbrook mm-hmm. was Robin, mm-hmm. and Robin wanted to be Batman and believed that it should
exactly.
be. He wanted to find a place where it was his team, and that's why the relationship didn't work between those two guys and Kevin Durant moved on. And the other thing to your point about the fact that they're the number one and two usage guys in the entire league over the last 5 years – the bigger thing, too, is most of these national pundits are saying, oh, well, I want to know if Russell Westbrook's going to be willing to play the two guard. Why? Because of the two guys that have the ball in their hands as much as these two guys, the lesser shooter is Westbrook, shooting threes at only 29%. And the fact that when he's at his best, he's going downhill, attacking the basket on the fast break, where he can be a willing passer. So my thing is Harden should be the two. Westbrook should have the ball in his hands with the idea that he has to be a facilitator first, and they should run whenever they get the opportunity because then it doesn't matter who's handling the ball, and it's not going to be dribbling for 19 seconds. So, again, I can hear everybody say and all these quotes about, oh, they got together and they talked about the fact that this was going to work and they were going to do – well, talk is cheap, and I want to see it on the floor. And unlike the national people, I think for this offense to be successful – I think Westbrook's got to have the ball in his hands, and Harden, who is fully capable of moving without the ball and is a better shooter, needs to play the shooting guard.
Okay, Joel, so does this give you cause to pause? Like, I look a little bit at the history of the Rockets with James Harden. He and Kevin McHale don't see eye to eye. McHale has gone 11 games into a season. He and Dwight Howard, I mean, that's not unusual. Dwight Howard doesn't see eye to eye with everyone, but Dwight's gone. He and CP3 have issues this season. CP3 is gone. Is this a pattern that we might see again if he and Westbrook don't work out?
It absolutely is, Carly. And I think that I'm shocked that more people haven't kind of seen between the lines to realize if you're looking for two people to point fingers at in terms of the blame of this Rockets organization's shortcomings over the last 5 years or so, it should start with James Harden and it should end with Daryl Morey, and it should be those two mm-hmm. guys standing alone because of the fact that you forgot a couple. Mike D'Antoni didn't get an extension, even though he had two of the better years in Rockets history. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that by midseason, I think D'Antoni could be gone if this thing isn't a well-oiled machine. And that would be no skin off of James's back because he just believes he literally has the keys to the franchise. And they've given it to him from the ownership to the upper management. They've basically said, James, this is your team. And so no matter what everybody wants to put pressure-wise on Mike D'Antoni, you could hear it in Austin Rivers' voice and the quotes that he had at the end of the year on ESPN on First Take when he said, look, guys, in professional basketball, if your best player and the coach don't see eye to eye or they have philosophical differences, the player's going to win. And so that's frustrating to the other players in the locker room, and that's what we saw a year ago. So I add names to that list. If Russell Westbrook and Mike D'Antoni are added to that list, then it could be James Harden's team all day long. That James Harden should shoulder just as much as he shouldered all of the success of the way he turned the franchise around with injured players last year. He should shoulder a majority of the blame when you look at the body of work and the fact that the two mainstays that are still standing after all of the interchangeable parts that have left are Daryl Morey and James Harden.
Hmm. We're talking to Joel Blank, NBA insider here on SB Nation Radio. So, Joel, I'd love to get you now with the landscape settling a bit to stack rank your top four teams in the Western Conference.
I really believe the two LA teams will end up 1 and 2. Where they start is going to be predicated on the fact that you've got two rosters with basically three quarters of the team filled up with players from other destinations. So that's going to take some time to build some chemistry and get some cohesiveness. But I would say just on talent alone before the season starts, I would go the two LA teams, Houston and Portland, with Utah and Denver in that mix as well. I think Portland, people forget, got to the Western Conference Finals without arguably one of their top three players in Nurkic, their big man. And if he comes back and he's healthy, that's a huge added plus for a team that already has a roster that's capable of doing a lot of damage. And we know what the two LA teams have. And I put Houston in there simply because all they had to give up was Chris Paul and all the, and they insert a former MVP 4 years younger at Russell Westbrook, you know, and bringing back Austin Rivers. I really believe that that team has a roster capable of performing against anybody in the league. It's just that from a seeding standpoint, as the season goes along, I don't think there's any doubt the LA teams will still be 1 and 2. If the Rockets get it together, they're going to be a 3. If they have issues, they could fall to 6, 7. They could be fighting for a playoff spot like OKC did when you saw with Westbrook and Paul George in the last 2 years. If there's not cohesion and continuity in the NBA, there's not a very big chance of success.
So interestingly, today a report came out that the Grizzlies were open to trading Andre Iguodala. Both the Clippers and the Rockets appear interested. How big of a difference does he make to those two teams?
To either team he goes to, he has a huge effect for different reasons. You know, from a Clippers perspective, you add a veteran that just gives you support off the bench, that has experience in multiple roles, that can help you to kind of get you over the hump in terms of building out a rotation of veterans that are experienced and know how to play for a championship. Because a lot of the guys on the Clippers roster are good, but the likes of Montrezl Harrell and Pat Beverly have never come close to what Andre Iguodala has experienced. From a Houston perspective, it gives you a locker room force of stability and a guy that, more importantly, playing in the Golden State system, can show the two best players on the team, hey, guys, look, I know you're both good in your own individual ways, but if you really want to make this work for our team, you got to look at what Steph and KD did in Golden State, and I was there for all of it. And if he can get them to kind of see the bigger picture and realize, hey, you can preach it till you're blue in the face, but if you really want to see what that Larry O'Brien trophy feels like at the end of the season, then it's about doing less so the team achieves more. And that means you defer a little bit. You are okay when the ball's not in your hands, but instead of sulking and pouting and not moving, you're cutting and screening. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but a statistic I heard this morning, which was just mind-boggling. Do you know how many picks Russell Westbrook and James Harden set combined now between the two guys for the entire season last year?
Gosh, I can't wait to hear this.
Four.
Oh,
four total.
Wow.
So if you think about that, they probably used back cuts and moved through the lane less than that.
Yep.
So you're looking at guys that are going to have to get out of their comfort zone and do other things. We know James likes to take plays off. He can't take them off, right, because he doesn't have the ball in his hands, because it's going to be easier for teams to defend. So it's really going to be a matter of do less to achieve more for these two guys. And Iguodala would help them to understand the Golden State way and how they were able to get over the hump and win because of the guys doing less to achieve more.
We're talking with Joel Blank, NBA expert and co-host of The Usual Suspects here on ESPN 97.5 out of Houston. Joel, last question for you. I think that's all we've got, but Sam Presti. We're talking about him every day, OKC general manager. Obviously, the guy can identify talent, evaluate talent. Look who he's brought in. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Serge Ibaka. Why can't he keep them?
I don't know if it's about keeping him, Carla, as much as in a lot of cases, I think he got the wrong coaches. Mm. I think that he needed coaches that were experienced in working with superstar players and young and up-and-coming players. And no matter how talented they might be and marketable they might be, when they were at practice and on the floor every day, they had to play within the confines of the system and understand that if they didn't, there would be ramifications. I think that Sam Presti and Russell Westbrook are the mirror images of what we just got done talking about, mm-hmm, with James Harden and Daryl Morey. Mm-hmm. those are the two guys that were left standing after all of those great players you mentioned came and went. And I think that there's pressure. The only thing that saves Presti is in a small market, they were able to win, even if they didn't win at all. Success in a small market means you get to the playoffs and you make a run, and that gives you an opportunity because small market success is gauged so much higher than when you're in a big city with big expectations. But the fact that he had all those players and never got to one over the hump with one championship, I think in any big city he'd have been fired by now. And now he's going to be in charge of a complete rebuild again, and they're just letting him have the reins and trade away everybody. So he's in a very unique cocoon that not many general managers have ever experienced, and all of them would love to have. But on the flip side, I also think Daryl Morey saved his job with this Westbrook trade because no matter how many years he had left on his deal, he had a different kind of ownership than OKC. He had an owner that was aggressive, that demanded and told the media and the people of Houston that there was going to be change, and there wasn't any. And this move saved his job, whether he had years on his contract or not.
Intriguing stuff. That's Joel Blank, our NBA insider. Joel, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Joel.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, we need you to think O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs.
Thinking.
Think about that, Carla. Get some guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, it was fantastic to talk to Joel Blank, our NBA insider.
Gosh, he's good.
So much insight in just that little window of time we had with him.
I know, I want him longer next time.
One thing that really jumped out at me that he said was that Iguodala could be a difference maker in the locker room for the Rockets. And I do believe...
And the Clippers, he said.
Well,
too.
Certainly in the Clippers, but in the Rockets, they need him, I think, in the sense that those two superstars need to learn how to share the ball, how to play the ball differently. And I think Iguodala, with his championship pedigree, really does bring something to the Rockets' locker room. Now, Grizzlies don't have to trade him at all. And then, of course, there's the question of what the Rockets would have to give up to get him. So it may not be possible, but it's an exciting possibility for the Rockets to think about adding somebody like Iguodala.
Oh, he is a star. And I'm sad that, you know, he's off the Warriors, of course. But I would rather Memphis trade him somewhere. That team decide, yeah, he's 35, I don't want him. He becomes a free agent. And then... Wham! Golden State can pick him up again.
You're showing your Golden State colors. I will say it was sort of interesting when we asked Joel to stack rank his top four teams in the Western Conference. He did not mention your Warriors, which surprised me a little
bit. Though, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I'm not surprised because essentially, okay, you don't have KD anymore, but they've won a championship without KD.
Yep.
But you don't have Andre. More importantly, and most importantly, you really don't have Klay. Until the postseason.
Right.
So I think that they're not going to be a lottery team, but I think they will struggle for sure because they brought in D'Angelo Russell, who is going to give them, I mean, he averaged over 20 points last season, had a fantastic all-star, you know, campaign. However, you know, the defense situation, and when you look at what the Clippers have done, I mean, the Warriors defensively, that is their weak spot. If they're going to have a weak spot, they're minus Iguodala, they're minus the length of Kevin Durant, they're minus the tenacity of Klay Thompson, who is their best defender, and they're going to go up against now, you look at LA, you've got paired up in Kawhi and Paul George, the two best perimeter defenders in the entire league, not only in the same conference, but teammates.
Yeah, and they've got Patrick Beverley also
and
on that
Patrick
defense.
Beverley, and,
right. They're well positioned defensively.
And, you know, the Rockets defensively are pretty good. And they're going to, yeah, well, I wouldn't say great, but yeah, pretty good.
I love this debate that's come out, which is the best duo, the best tandem on any team in the league. And it was just funny because to me, about a month ago when AD and LeBron paired up, everybody said, oh my goodness, AD and LeBron might be the best duo
ever,
right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, maybe we have an even better duo with Leonard and George at the Clippers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not to be lost, the Rockets have a pretty special duo there, too. Two MVPs, both in the prime of their careers. That really just doesn't happen. Usually you get two guys like that, maybe two MVPs, one's early in his stage, one's later.
They're both the same age.
Both the same age. in the prime of their career, MVP guys in the last few years. Really impressive duo, not to be lost. Curry and Thompson. Thompson will be back. Those are two impressive guys on that team. So the league at least has more parity than it has. I mean, coming into every year the last five years. Yeah.
No one's even talking about the East.
Well, that's
God
another matter. Right.
I mean, geez. I mean, but I really like what Joel said, which is, yes, if you look at Harden and Westbrook on paper,
yes,
you're like, holy moly.
Right.
But it's a totally different deal because somebody in that mix is going to have to defer a little bit. And, you know, that's what happened. That's why KD coming to Golden State worked, because there was deference with Steph Curry. And everyone was like, oh, he's falling off after two MVP seasons. No, he's not. He realizes if we're bringing in an all-star, this all-star wants the rock. And so this is how it has to work. So it remains to be seen. It can work. No kidding. It can work in Houston. But somebody's going to have to be willing to give in a little bit.
One of the interesting things that I've, when I look back on all this taking place in the last 6 weeks in the NBA, is, of course, when Kawhi Leonard was contemplating going to the Clippers, he wanted to take somebody with him. And he ended up getting George. He did not ask for Russell Westbrook. I mean, he had a choice of the two of them, right? And basically one of them could have forced a trade. Okay, KD was his first choice for obvious reasons.
Can you blame him?
Oh, yeah. And no. Everybody loves KD, except, of course, KD can't play this year. And
well, at that point, he didn't even know that.
So let's talk about the choice of George over Westbrook. I get that. I mean, George is a much more defensive player. He's probably a better all-around player. I mean, he doesn't – I don't know. You look at the pedigree of these guys. Westbrook's pedigree, his stats over the years, his MVP title, he is a guy that you might look at on paper and say, no, he warrants being the first choice of the two. But Kawhi went out and got George.
Well, you know, you brought up stats, and here's what is an interesting question that I would pose to you. So do you look at Westbrook and – and or the Westbrook-Harden duo as a combination of stat stuffers? Or do you look at Westbrook or this combo as winners?
Right.
Stat stuffers or winners? I see stat stuffers. I haven't seen winners yet, but maybe this will happen. But what do you think? Is that too rude to say that?
Well, no, I don't know that it's too rude. I mean, I guess the tension on the other side is you've got a really good track record the last couple of years for the Rockets in the regular season. They won a lot of games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's been a struggle deep into the playoffs. Do you blame that on the Rockets, or do you just say, my goodness, they were facing one of the greatest teams of all time in the Golden State Warriors? I mean, that was always the hurdle that the Rockets could never overcome. It's interesting because I sit across from you, and we talk NBA, and you're a longstanding Warriors fan, and coming into the playoffs every year, you would always have angst about whether the Warriors could actually do it, have to do it. Can they really do it again? Will they get injured and all this stuff?
So many things have to align.
They do. But I will say, not being a Warriors fan, being a Rockets fan, being for teams
Celtics,
other than the Rockets,
Celtics.
Love all these other teams. I'm not committed to the. And from the outside, it always seemed like the Warriors were just insurmountable and unbeatable. And the team went, it's almost to me a little bit, well, the NBA's problem is that nobody has a shot of beating the Warriors, was from where I sat. You sat over there and you were always worried, could the Warriors actually do it again? Would they break down? Ultimately, they did break down. Those long extended seasons led to all those injuries and that certainly changed the dynamic.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And load management, I think, has never been more obvious of how important it is than seeing how Toronto and Nick Nurse handled Kawhi Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, David, about the Kawhi phenomenon. Okay, because you look at a guy, you look at him two seasons ago. He's in San Antonio. He's thrown under every bus that could possibly be. I mean, they want him out. He's not a teammate. He's faking an injury. He's not rehabbing with the team. All this business. He gets traded as far away as he can go to another country and on a one-year rental.
And really, at that point in time, Toronto was considered a team that just could never get over the hump.
Well, because of LeBron. They always made it, but couldn't get past Cleveland. Well, now LeBron. So that is a factor into it, too. That even plays into more with what I'm going to ask you. So, yes, so this is the first season that LeBron is not in the East, and Toronto is able to come up at the top. Here's what I want to ask. I've never seen, and let me say up front, that Kawhi Leonard is a transcendent talent. He's amazing. Do you think, and maybe we'll have to carry this over, have you ever seen a faster rise by anybody than Kawhi Leonard this year?
Yeah, he went from really being an outcast to now being dubbed the next best thing we've had to Michael Jordan.
That's all we're talking about.
An incredible turnaround for Kawhi in a very short period of time. Now listen, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Joe McGrane. He's a former MLB player. We'll ask him about that big series and what we can take from the Dodgers-Red Sox series this weekend. Dodgers looking awfully good. Joe McGrane.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Okay, Carla, we all know how much you love your bachelorette. I've got something better for you.
Okay, good.
You do not want to miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. It's this Saturday night. It's Manny Pacquiao versus Keith Thurman.
I love me some Manny Pacquiao.
All right. Well, it's this Saturday. It's 9 Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and it's live on Fox Pay-Per-View. That's Fox Pay-Per-View. Order it now and be sure to watch.
Perfect.
Saturday night coming up. All right. Joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Joe McGrane, former Major League Baseball player. Joe, welcome into the show.
Thank you, guys. Great to speak with you. Boss on the Gloss. That is some outstanding branding right there.
I thought so, but just
and
to be...
guess which one is the gloss.
Yeah, just to be clear, she's the gloss.
It doesn't take me long to figure that out.
If you could only see her, you'd really understand.
And you definitely know I'm not the boss.
Well, Joe, thanks for joining us. I hope you got to see some of that series, Dodgers-Red Sox, of marquee matchup over the weekend. Dodgers came out on top, and I think in Boston they're figuring that, gosh, this was a chance to make a statement, to really come out after the All-Star break with a big series win over the Dodgers, and they let it slip away. What is your takeaway from that series?
Well, it was on a couple of things. First, from the Red Sox standpoint, and, you know, when they say the World Series hangover, it's not so much about guys going out and doing the rubber chicken dinners and profiting off an outstanding year. It's more of a pitching staff that their workload gets extended, and it also showed like the great depth that the Dodgers had when, you know, it was moved to a 10-day IL. Andrew Friedman, has been able to, whether you want to use the word manipulate or craft, the 10-day DL to his advantage. So have the Yankees, and it's created great depth between both of those teams, and I don't think, unless you guys have a better idea, whether there's an argument that the Dodgers and Yankees are the two best teams in baseball right now.
Well, they are amazing right now. They're really on a good run. I do want to ask you one more question about the Red Sox, and that's Chris Sale. He's had a really tough season. Red Sox, of course, went out and just traded for a number 5 pitcher, but their fate rests on whether their elite pitchers are going to pitch well. Your former Major League player, ERA winner 1 year. What's wrong with Chris Sale? What does he need to do to get it right?
Well, Chris, for one, to his credit, is very accountable after games. And I saw his little chit-chat with the media afterwards. And he's very hard on himself. And he has high expectations. And he hates it when he has to turn the game over to the bullpen. And he has that delivery where he looks like he's trying to skip a rock across a lake. And there's been 50% of scouts saying that he's going to blow out. And then there's been, the other half that said he is going to be fine. We all struggle as pitchers. And the first thing that you go back and you look at the films, the video, when you have not pitched well, and it really gets back to location and favorable counts. You're on the attack when you're 0-1, when you're 0-2, when you're 1-2. And when he's figured out that he doesn't have to throw max velocity every time, I'm not worried really so much about his arm. It's about pitching execution because, yeah, if I brought, you know, bring up the name Andrew Friedman again and talking about true number one starters, you know, he would be one of the guys that I would that I would mention, and he's not pitching like one right now because he's not hitting his spots, and sometimes you need just like a little mechanical adjustment to be like a little blankie of confidence to go, okay, I've got it. I have it fixed. I think he's okay, but I think where his pitches are ending up are to the barrel of the hitter.
Those are great points, Joe, and things that definitely to think about going forward here. So we're talking with Joe McGrane, former MLB pitcher, color commentator for all things MLB Network, Olympics, everything else. We've gotten to hear you. Let me ask you, we're hearing a lot of chatter about the long ball, and we're broadcasting here in Houston. Justin Verlander has been especially vocal about it.
Yep.
Home runs are on pace for another record-setting season. And, you know, do you believe, as Justin Verlander has said, that the balls are, they're different? I mean, are they juiced? I know they're talking about the pill in the center is different. What do you think?
I don't think that there was this thing coming from Central Baseball on Park Avenue to say, you know, we have to turn this into a rabbit ball. But one thing I do know, just in the blind field test, if you put a bag of balls, you know, blindfolded, let's just say put 10 of them in there, and when I pitched and 10 of them now, I could pick out the ones that I wanted without ever having to look at it. I think it's silly to say that the ball is exactly the same in the year 2000 than it is in 2019. Like most things manufacturing-wise, things get better. The other thing is in the change in style, with most hitters hitting up on the ball and choosing to hit over the shift, the answer to that is right now velocity with pitchers, and they combat that by throwing the ball upstairs in the strike zone. So when you throw up in the strike zone, you don't have to necessarily execute by hitting spots in or out. So hitters are a little bit more confident. They take harder swings. The location is not as good as it was. And the ball is made better and it has less drag. And I've had it right in my hand. The seams aren't as raised as well, which is one of the reasons why umpires, you know, didn't care when I was playing about pitchers using pine tar to get a better grip on the ball, or nowadays sunscreen and a little mixture, bullfrog sunscreen and a little mixture of that. So I think it is a myriad of things. I don't think there is this conspiracy that the ball has been changed yet to provide more home runs and less strikeouts, because the statistics don't support that. And we all know that baseball is cyclical, and not everybody throws 97, and I think the game is going to kind of roll back and change a little bit more as pitchers learn to execute a little bit more down in the strike zone and make changes, as opposed to just trying to throw the ball as hard as they can for as long as they can. And so many of those balls end up in the middle of the plate, and that's why highlights are what they are.
Joe, I'd love to get your thoughts on kind of the new roles that Major League Baseball has that are being created in Major League Baseball for pitchers, you know, openers versus starters, using starters as closers, which we've seen in even the World Series. Do you prefer the traditional roles, or do you like this evolution of how they're using their pitching lineups?
Well, I had the privilege of broadcasting the Rays for 11 years and seeing them at their absolute worst and their absolute best. And this is an organization where, you know, the other 29 clubs were not working with blinders on. they were watching what the Rays were doing. How were they able to win 90 games last year? How did they do it? And a lot of it happened with a prospect injury, Brent Honeywell, a few years ago, and all of a sudden they're short in their pitching staff, and it almost ended up being a perfect game. Now you're yesterday in Baltimore, so you know you're talking about a guy that goes out there and throws a couple of innings. My opinion on it is, I still, even to this day, being far removed from playing on the field, see myself as a starter, and I commend the Rays for taking a desperation move with losing a couple of their great prospects and figuring out another way to build a better mousetrap with the opener. The only problem is you have a guy that starts the game and he gets into difficulty, and it kind of throws out the whole rhythm of what the guy that's following him, the true starter. And it's also a way to put kind of a drag on pitching salaries as well. I commend the Rays for using the system as it is, and based on, but if you had five good arms, you would not be, or four good arms, you would not be using the opener.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Joe McGrain, former Major League Baseball player. So I want to ask you, the trade deadline looming now, a couple weeks out. There's just about everybody would love to pick up a top line, front line starter.
Sure.
Trevor Bauer, Madison Baumgartner, Marcus Stroman, Noah Syndergaard, those four names tossed about. To me, Trevor Bauer would be hard for the Indians to trade. They're actually in contention for the postseason. But who do you see as most likely to get moved?
I'm thinking probably the Yankees. I love left-handed pitchers that are swing and miss guys. So I look at Robbie Ray with the Diamondbacks going to the going to the Yankees, and also, it seems like Marcus Stroman has done everything but sing the song "I Love New York," and certainly that's another possibility. But the Indians are, with regards to Trevor Bauer, are playing so well that, you know, they don't have to make a move immediately, and they can kind of let the market come to them, that, because if they just get completely knocked over by a great deal, they're certainly going to take it. But why not take another chance at another year of getting to the postseason, because it's going to get very lean for the Indians next year. So why not go all in and keep Trevor Bauer? So if I had to make like a wild prediction, I would say Robbie Ray would be the guy that would be going to the Yankees.
All right, you heard it. That's Joe McGrain. Joe, thank you so much for joining David and Carla here on SB Nation Radio.
All right, keep up the great branding. That's the best I've heard.
Awesome.
I love it. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, I didn't think a regular feature on the show would be talking about Robert Kraft's love life. Robert Kraft, of course, owner of the Patriots. He had his own little dalliance there.
He would have ended with the Orchid of Asia Day Spa. But no.
No, there's more.
Kicked him into another gear, I guess, right?
Well, it is interesting. It would seem that he has broken up with his girlfriend, the girlfriend that he had before the Orchid of Asia Day Spa. He was dating a lovely woman, 39-year-old woman, Ricky Noelle Lander, a beautiful model and actress. Mm-hmm. Of course, Robert Kraft is 78 years old, so the optics of his 78-year-old persona with a 39-year-old woman, certainly...
Well, there's that.
There's that. But he's got a new girlfriend, and it was a big topic in the Boston Globe this week that Robert Kraft has been seen with somebody else. And
give me the skinny.
Well, she's a New York City doctor. She's Dana Bloomberg. And she's an attractive woman in her own right. And the two have been seen out at society events and such. Robert Kraft is no longer hunkered down. He is very much out in the public in Boston. He's given a great deal of money to some great causes. So he is back and seemingly on a good track in life again.
And what do you think of Dana?
Well, from a personal perspective, I've
seen Dr. Dana.
Dr. Dana. She's a New York City doctor, and she's very attractive. She doesn't come across, she doesn't look as young to me as Ricky Noel Lander did sitting next to Robert Kraft. I'm not going to say that Dana Blumberg is a peer of the 78-year-old owner of the Patriots.
Let's young his relative, right?
But she's certainly an attractive date to have on the town for Robert Kraft.
Well, go Robert.
Yes. Now,
the Patriot way.
Well, maybe. I mean, then the other, of course, subplot of all that is his previous girlfriend did get pregnant during their dating tenure. And there was some disclaimer that perhaps he was not the father, that there was an understanding that since there was such an age disparity that she might go have a different father. All of that mysterious. And
just fascinating.
Yes, I thought. I mean,
and that we're talking about it is even funnier.
Well, just one of these little subplots that it happens, right?
Yeah.
By all accounts, he is going to be fine and acquitted of the charges of Orchid Day Spa. The whole case and premise to put video cameras in there to catch someone in the midst of human trafficking apparently is not something that has been held up in court. So Robert Kraft will likely pay a fine and move on, and that would not be an ongoing issue for him.
Can I just repeat again? The Patriot way.
Well, now.
All be darned. Goodness. Always get out of it. How does that happen?
Well, a great hour in the book. We've had Joel Blank on all things NBA, Joe McGrane and the MLB, and we will be right back with much more in hour number two coming up. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.